Hello and welcome to the Snow Brains podcast, where it's my job to interview the most intelligent people in the snow sports industry and pass their fascinating knowledge on to you, our listeners. I'm your host, Miles Clark. I'm a professional free skier, a professional mountain guide, a UC Berkeley molecular cell biology graduate, the founder and CEO of Snow Brains, and I once slept walked directly into a river and didn't even wake up. The Snow Brains podcast is brought to you by Alta Ski Area. Come enjoy Alta midweek magic this season. My guest today is Ron Cohen, the president and chief operating officer of Squaw Valley Alpine Meadows in Lake Tahoe, California. Ron has been the president and COO of Squaw Alpine since April 2018. Ron brings 17 years of outdoor industry experience to Squaw Alpine and has been an attorney for many years. Ron's experience includes serving as Alterra Mountain Company's deputy general counsel from 2017 to 2018. Prior to Alterra, Ron held a number of positions during an 8-year tenure at Mammoth Mountain Ski Area, where he ultimately served as Chief Administrative Officer and General Counsel. Ron is a graduate of the University of California, Santa Barbara, and of Northwestern University School of Law. He started his career practicing law in Los Angeles and then Mammoth Lakes before purchasing Tioga Pass Resort, a backcountry ski and summer resort, with a group of other investors and running it from 2002 to 2010. Ron and his wife, Stacy Corliss, are also members of the Mono County Board of Supervisors. Hello, Ron. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here. How are you?
I'm holding it together. Thanks for asking.
Good. Yeah, I'm sure that we're all under a little additional pressure this time of year. All right. Well, let's get started with addressing the elephant in the room. Squaw Valley is changing its name this year, and that's huge. Why is Squaw Valley changing its name?
Well, we're changing our name so that our name is no longer focused on something that a significant number of people find offensive.
When will the name be changed?
Well, we're working on that now, and we've previously said we're hopeful that we'll have arrived at a decision for a new name sometime in the beginning of the next calendar year, and then the work will begin to actually implement that name change. And we would expect that to be done during next summer, the off season, and all ready to go and in place in advance of the next ski season.
And when will you announce the name?
Well, we don't have an exact date yet, but sometime after the new year. I would expect sort of end of January, early February, somewhere in there. A bit of a free-flowing process, so we don't have a milestone date that we're looking to hit specifically.
And then it sounds like the name will be enacted for next season, 21-22.
That's right.
Who's in charge of changing the name of Squaw Valley? I heard something about a renaming committee. Can you share who's on that committee and how that might work?
I've heard that. I've actually read it in social. Well, when's the renaming committee going to be named? There's no renaming committee.
Okay.
And so, you know, this is our business name, and so we're in charge of it. I'm the president and chief operating officer of the company. And so I'm accountable and ultimately I'm in charge. I also have people who I report to, the chief executive officer of Alterra Mountain Company. I've got the board of directors. And so like so many other things in the world, it's not a binary issue of one person's in charge. We're all of us have our respective authorities and pieces that we're interested in, where we hold, where we're stakeholders, and where we have places at which we might put in our opinion or our authority. And ultimately, we've got to get to a decision that that a number of constituents agree with. But when you say, well, who's in charge of the process, ultimately it's me. I'm accountable. That's what happens when you take the job.
Absolutely. Why is Squaw changing its name now as opposed to in the past?
I can't really speak to the past from personal experience. I got here in April of 2018. Really my experience that's within my personal knowledge. As this issue arose again to the forefront, we really considered what we should do, what the right thing to do is. We thought about that question in the context of now, not in the context of how come it wasn't done 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 40 years ago. What's the right thing to do now? Judge our actions by the standards that we apply to ourselves now. not the standards that somebody else applied to themselves at some prior time. And so the decision is based on our values, our standards, as we see them now. Prior attempts or considerations on changing the name obviously applied the standards of the people who were in place then when they were applying them. So I know a little bit about some of those efforts, and particularly there's some press coverage from back in the sort of middle, late 90s of some discussions around changing the name. And from what I can tell from press coverage and from a few people who have some recollection of that time who were around, that really arose when the first states started to make rules about the use of the word squaw for geographic place names. That started in the mid-90s, and at about that time when those states were making those decisions and actually enacting laws against using squaw as a place name, I think it was natural that the question arose for Squaw Valley Ski Area because it's one of the best known uses of that name. And so all I can tell from that press coverage at that time was that the decision was made not to change the name at that time.
Is Squaw considering naming the resort after the Washoe Native Americans who used to live there?
You know, we have a pretty much an open whiteboard on this at this time. References to Washoe tribe or their words or ways that they thought about this place are all things that I think will play into what we ultimately decide to choose for our name. In my early discussions with representatives of the tribe, I was told that it wasn't something that they were pushing for, that they weren't pushing for our name to be a Washoe word or a Washoe name from their language. I think things like Washoe names, Washoe language names, applying to geographic places, things that maybe even were previously named with the Washoe name, really make sense. So things like the peak and the creek, these are potentially things that Native Americans may have had a name for when they lived here. And knowing what that is, if that's the case, and considering that through a place name renaming process, to me is totally appropriate and something that I've shared with the tribe that we'd be willing to participate with. At the same time, I think, you know, our business is not something that existed at the time of the Washoe tribe living here. So I think there's a difference there.
That's great that you guys are working with the Washoe people to get their input. I think that a lot of people think that's a great thing. Is Olympic Valley, the town in which Squaw Valley Ski Resort lives, being considered as a candidate for the new name?
So Olympic Valley came about because as the area was preparing for the Olympics and a post office was put here, the decision naming the place, the post office location, Squaw Valley, ran into a barrier, which was that there was already a Squaw Valley in California. And it was decided that you couldn't have two post offices with the same place name. Somehow the name got chosen of Olympic Valley. And so that's applied to the post office, I think, since, you know, basically 1960, it's been that way. And there's been this sort of weird dual name of this place, Olympic Valley from a post office and destination perspective, and Squaw Valley from a more historic perspective back to 1850s, 1860s. That's how it got here. I think that, you know, from the perspective of naming the ski area or the business Olympic Valley, the Olympics are an incredibly important part of our history. There's only a few places that have hosted a Winter Olympics, and this Winter Olympics was incredibly special for a number of reasons. And so it's obviously very important to us. We have a lot of Olympic stuff around and we refer to it a lot, but it is not the sum total of our existence as a ski area. We have a lot more to us than just the Olympics. And so I think there's, when the concept of changing the name comes up, you very quickly turn to things that might be perceived as easy. And I think, you know, a lot of people might view, hey, that's really easy, just change it to the Olympic Valley Ski Resort. you know, while it's easy, I'm not sure it's right. And so it only really represents a small part of who we really are. And so I acknowledge the ease, but it's probably not the right approach for us.
Well, thank you. That's a great answer. And I also did want to say, you know, it really was a big deal, the Olympics there. It was the 8th Winter Olympics. Obviously, it was in California, which is groundbreaking. It was the first televised Olympics, and Walt Disney did the opening ceremony. So that was a very exciting time and really broke a lot of ground for what Squaw Valley is now. Let's get into Squaw Alpine's COVID-19 policies for the upcoming season. And I want to start off with the impressive numbers of Squaw Valley Alpine Meadows. These two resorts almost touch each other. They live under one ski pass, and they are currently connected via a short shuttle ride. And they may be connected in the near future via a gondola, which we'll touch on later. Squaw Valley Alpine Meadows is the third largest ski resort in North America. They have 6,000 acres of skiable terrain. They get 450 inches of annual snowfall. They have 42 lifts. Their hourly lift capacity is 73,000 people per hour, which is nuts. And they get over 300 sunny days per year, which is also incredible for a ski area. What will skiing and riding look like at Squaw Alpine this season?
Well, you know, you seem to know all these stats really well. You've been here before, right?
A couple of times. I passed through.
It's great to hear you talk about Squaw Alpine with such passion. It really is an incredible place.
And I don't want to interrupt you, but I will. I have been skiing at Squaw for 19 seasons now. And I am, in case listeners don't know this, I'm a true addict. So continue, Ron. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. I was hoping you would say that. Get your partisanship out on the table since we're recording this on Election Day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Here we go. At least I can firmly stand behind something in public.
That's right. And deservedly so, based on extensive personal experience. So what will the ski and ride experience look like at Squaw Alpine this year? I think by and large, the ski and ride experience will look about the same. You know, I think we'll have pieces that are different, like loading lifts, particularly enclosed cabins and things like that. But the actual ski and ride experience, I think, is something that really doesn't need to change. It's all of the other resort experience around it that really is going to see the most amount of change.
So there might be less people at Squaw because of capacity restrictions. Is this going to be the season to be at Squaw Alpine because of a little less people?
Well, it's always the season to be at
Good
Squaw
answer.
Alpine. Last season's just last season. And no matter how awesome it was, you don't actually have your boots on the snow anymore from last season. And so the next season's always the best one. The one you're in is always the best one. And so, you know, I think it will be the best season. Will there be additional greatness to it? Because maybe that best day of the year has fewer people on it if it happens to land on a Saturday. I suppose that's entirely possible. It's, you know, part of skiing as well. Part of the experience at the resort is, you know, enjoying it with your friends and your fellow skiers. And I think, you know, some of that's likely to be lost. That social aspect of skiing is something that I think most of us who are addicts, we really enjoy. And we won't likely see as much of that this year. It'll be more focused on the actual ski and ride experience. So, you know, is it going to be the season to be here? I don't think that any of us think that coronavirus is making anything better. So I wouldn't expect it to make this ski season better, but it'll be awesome to be here.
What are you most excited about for this upcoming season?
You know, I'm most excited about actually getting open and putting all of the plans and work that we've been at work on for months now into play and actually getting back into the business of being an open and operating ski area. Shutting down last season was incredibly difficult for all of us. There was nothing good about it. And so the prospect that we can get back going again, get people back out on the snow, start having people have something in their lives that is sort of purely fun. I'm really excited to be a part of that.
So am I. And just a side note, I was there on closing day and it was an awesome powder day and it was dumping. It started off a regular day, ended up a powder day. And then all this snow fell right then, right as we closed, approximately March 15th. And we had a, and obviously we had a close for good reason. And it was challenging.
It was cruel.
It was a little cruel. Okay. I didn't want to go that direction that deeply, but yeah, it was tough. You know, we're all sitting there just looking at this mountain going, oh my goodness, you know, this is what we dream about. But it's all going to happen again. The beauty of winter and the beauty of skiing riding is it's this renewal process. It's this rebirth every year. And that is one of the reasons we are so excited for the coming season. One big message we're really pushing at Snowbrains is a very simple one. Be kind. Many people are more stressed than they've ever been due to the coronavirus pandemic and all the things that that entails. What message is Squaw Alpine putting out there about how we should make an extra effort to be kind to one another this season?
I think that summarizes it. We may use different words, but the feeling that you're putting across is the same one that we're trying to share with people. We want people to understand that that it's going to take all of us. We're all on the team. So all of us have a role to play. All of us have to sacrifice in one way or another to maintain skiing and riding through a pandemic. I've said it a couple times in a couple different ways. One is we want everybody to be thinking in the back of their minds that they don't want to be the reason we lose the season. And so that means following the rules. And, if you don't agree with the rules, then don't come. And that's a pretty straight and hard message, but it is for a reason. We can't have people doing whatever they want when it comes to things like face covering and distance. We need people to follow those reasonable rules. We need people to give space and grace to other people, just as you've said, be kind. And so that means that, exactly as you've said it, have some empathy for your fellow skier and rider. You don't know all of the pressures going on in their life. And so, you just have that in the back of your mind when you're dealing with people at the ski area that, there have been incredible stresses on people. They may be here because they have a pass and they may come three times a week, or they may have been really lucky to get one of the very few available tickets. And this may be the one thing that they get to do that's fun in a month or 2 months. And so have that in the back of your mind, be kind and give people some space and really be part of our team. This is very similar to the skier responsibility code. It's now, I think, 51 or 52 years old, and it underlies how we act with each other out on the hill. And it makes a huge difference when people know the code versus not knowing the code. And so we expect you to know the code when you come here. We put it up all over the ski area. We put it on the trail map. We put it on the website. You learn it when you get in a lesson, and we expect people to follow the code. That's a sort of social contract. It says, hey, if you let me come ski at your ski area, I'll follow these rules without you having to tell them to me constantly. And I think the same thing is the case with rules that are developed around COVID. The only way that we all get to enjoy the hill is if we all follow the rules that we put out there. We really need people to do exactly what you've just said. Be kind, be compassionate, be aware of the rules and follow them. Be a part of our team.
I think that's going to be the most important thing we talk about on this podcast. So I just want to reiterate also what you just said, be kind. Think about being kind on the roadways when you're parking, be kind when you're in lift lines, when you're on the mountain, help people if they need help, follow the rules. And that segues perfectly into my next section, which we're going to get into the reopening details. So let's get into some of the reopening details about the upcoming season before jumping back into some fun stuff. So when do you open for the upcoming ski season?
Our planned announced opening day is November 25th.
The USA has seen over 9.4 million coronavirus cases as of November 3rd, 2020, today. What would it take for Squaw Alpine to shut down again?
I think that there's a number of different things that could cause us to shut down. Obviously, the clearest one would be a government order to do so. We're in a very different place than we were last March. As we got in end of February into early March last year, we had a lot of uncertainty about what we were dealing with. We're seeing reports come out of different places of just how contagious the virus might be. We have government trying to figure out where it is. It's popping up in small places, cruise ships being one of the first places, and lethality was really not well understood either. Those were very difficult times for us as a resort. We were really trying to make decisions based on public health of our employees, our guests, our communities, without clear direction from government. And so we were really struggling with issues of, should we close? Should we not hold a certain event? Should we impose social distancing and lift lines? We were getting nothing really from the government. They were just trying to get their heads wrapped around it. And so we made calls based on our best understanding of what the right thing to do was. And ultimately, as a company, Alterra Mountain Company, elected to close before we were required by government to do so. It was just a few days later that California, that the governor basically shut down almost all businesses and sent everybody home. And so we were, you know, just a little bit ahead of that curve. So we're obviously in a different spot now. And the government has, public health officials have set up multiple layers of rules, of screening, of testing, of all kinds of things that they're looking at. And so I would say that most likely thing that would cause us to close would be a government order or request to do so. And I think that sort of thing would follow from some sort of outbreak that's tied to the resort and can't be managed with the resort remaining open. I don't think that's going to happen. I guess the other thing that could cause a closure would be, the government's decision to put almost all or all but essential businesses back into some sort of lockdown. And so we would be likely closed just like so many other places. I don't think that's going to happen either, but none of us really know. So I think those are the sorts of things that would cause us to close down. But, you know, we're in constant discussion and coordination with our county health department. And so those are the kinds of decisions that will happen based on communication between us. And I expect and know that they're going to do the right thing too, that they're not going to be reactive or punitive or anything like that. They're looking out for public health.
Agreed. And to echo your sentiments, there really was so much uncertainty last year when we all had to close down in March. So this year, if something like that happens, I think it'll be there'll be a lot more knowledge based around it. So that should be really helpful. According to the National Ski Areas Association, 5 to 10% of the workforce at U.S. ski resorts are on foreign visas each year, a critical amount, according to David Byrd, Director of Risk and Regulatory Affairs at the National Ski Area Association. How will the current visa restrictions due to coronavirus affect Squaw Alpine?
Yeah, just like any other business that has some level of reliance on visa workers, we don't just have a reliance on visa workers. We enjoy hosting visa workers. They're a valued part of our workforce. They bring a different set of experiences and worldview to our team. And I think people really appreciate having visa workers on staff. And so some of that is likely still to be around, just not in the levels that previously was. And so, for example, there are still, for all businesses, there are still visa workers who never left the country, never went back to the country they came from and have been here prior to March and still are. They're allowed to work just like anyone else, and we're excited to have some of those people on our team. There are a number of people who did go back and who we'd love to see come back, particularly J-1s who come for a student experience that includes working. Love to have them back. It doesn't look like it's in the cards right now. If it can be done safely and responsibly, we'd love to have them back.
I am stoked that you mentioned that, because that's something that really means a lot to me, and I can feel deep in my heart. I love having the J-1s here, the people who come from South America, from all over the world. They bring so much flavor. Y me encanta los Latinos. I have spent my last 11 seasons in South America. I've lived in South America half the year for the last 11 years. And I just love it down there. I love that culture the Aussies bring and the Kiwis and the South Africans, everybody. And so I thank you for touching on that. I hadn't even thought of that angle to bring up today, but that those people bring so much great culture and flavor to our region. I'm going to miss them, but I'm so glad summer's still here.
That's why those programs exist. They get people exposed to things they wouldn't otherwise be exposed to. And when you're talking about people going from one country to another, getting to really experience other people, that's the best stuff we have to offer in the world. It's something that changes all of us. And so we all want to get back to that as quickly as we can.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. What do you think will be the most challenging operational changes at Squaw Alpine this winter in response to coronavirus?
I think we're two very big mountains, two Class C avalanche areas. These are complicated places to operate. With Squaw, with its multiple avalanche complexes that have interdependencies on each other. Alpine as well, a big risk as well over there, and a lot of work to do to mitigate that risk.
And you said Class E avalanche? What does that mean?
Charlie, it's the highest level of avalanche risk. A lot of avalanche activity on both of these mountains, and so our teams that do avalanche hazard mitigation are big teams that use a lot of different tools. And they need to get spread out over a huge space. Those acres you recited at the beginning, 6,000 acres across these two ski areas is a lot of area. Getting people out to remote locations takes time. Coordinating that is, so the daily choreography of getting these mountains open in inclement weather and in good weather is something that's learned over a period of years and depends on a lot of experience in how you move from one place to another. You can't just head out on the mountain. It takes a lot of time and work and planning to send people out to the right place. So choreography, orchestration is really what it is. And that is going to be different this year. You know, a very simple example is sending patrollers out on a mission to throw hand charges at particular areas in their atlas. In prior years, you might have just piled a group of ski patrollers into the back of a troop cat, and off they went to the location where they would jump out and head out on their missions. Those patrollers need to pay attention to social distancing now. They can't just pile into the back of a cat like they used to. It might take two or three or four trips to get that same group of people out to their various locations. Most people who ski and ride, probably most people listening to this, have seen a snowcat before and know that while they're generally, particularly the ones we have, a really cool red color, kind of like a Ferrari, they don't perform anything like a Ferrari. They go about 10 or 12 miles an hour. And so getting across those expanses takes a bunch of time. And so all of those things, that's just one little example of all of the pieces that need to be orchestrated. In almost every case, each piece is going to have more time layered into it. And so we need to maintain safety for our workforce. And so things like that are probably going to take a little more time. They're going to be a little more complicated. And it just goes into that prior message of being kind and giving people space. We're going to need all of that this year.
And let's inject into that prior message of be kind, be patient. So I think patience is going to be a extremely valuable virtue this year. Essentially what you're saying is it's going to take longer to get things open on avalanche danger days. And so let's be patient.
Yeah, probably on all days. We're always going to aim to be open at opening time. But, you know, it's going to take us some work to get things reorchestrated. We say this to each other a lot as we're going through our planning meeting, you know, with our team. It's not easy to reinvent the ski business from the bottom up. And that's what we're doing. We are actually looking at everything we do and reconsidering it in the light of all of the considerations of coronavirus. So you take a place like Squaw or Alpine that's been operating for 60 or 70 years, and there's layers of experience that are built up within those operating protocols. Things we learned last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago. We're doing that all different. We've got to deconstruct it and rebuild it with entirely different considerations. It's a massive amount of work and a really challenging thing to go through. And so we're going to learn as we go along as well. And so we're going to have to build change in as we go along. And so I think, you know, there are scenarios where those changes will have more impact and scenarios where they'll have less. And we'll learn what those are through our planning effort now and then ultimately as we go through them.
Agreed. There's so much to learn with this. I'm glad that you touched on that. And we won't get into this because it's a whole other podcast, but Squaw Alpine sees some of the most extreme weather at any ski resort on Earth because we're right next to a 6,000 mile wide body of water called the Pacific Ocean. And so, yeah, Squaw has such big challenges with all that because of the extreme weather. And then on top of that, you know, there's talk of the people at Squaw throwing more hand charges than any other ski resort on Earth. It's just, it's a major operation to get this place open. So rewriting all that is going to take a lot of time. Thank you for touching all that. Do you think Squaw Alpine being a large ski resort is an advantage or disadvantage this winter with coronavirus restrictions in place?
I think there's elements of both. If you're a small ski area and you don't have any enclosed cabins, you do it for the love of it. You know, you make a little money in some years here and there, enough to reinvest in your business and keep it alive. And you have a dedicated group of people who are your guests, but you never really have a busy day. You know, if that's how you're going into this year, you have probably significantly fewer issues to deal with. Distance isn't really an issue for you, and capacity isn't really an issue for you. It's just never been. And so you may not see a whole lot of change. That's maybe not a great thing if you're looking at a business model, but for coronavirus aspects of the business might not need to change so dramatically. You know, big business like ours, a big ski area, we do have capacity days. And so we need to be prepared for how we control visitation. And so we've taken some significant steps in that regard. Those are big steps that a small ski area might not have to take. And so one might view that as a disadvantage potentially, but there's advantages on the other side as a big operator that's part of a big company. We have the resources to address those issues. And so, for example, at Squaw Alpine, we're the better part of $1 million into purchases aimed at changing approaches at having the right equipment in the right places to deal with our spaces and our infrastructure. And so if you're a small business, you probably can't do that. So I think there's advantages and disadvantages, but I think that both can play to those advantages and both have ways to address the disadvantages.
Will there be a reservation system this season at Squaw Alpine?
So we will start the season without requiring reservations. We don't want to require reservations. And we have the technology, the capacity to implement a reservation system, but it's not something we want to do. So we're addressing visitation, controlling visitation through other means. The means that we've talked about are we've temporarily eliminated walk-up tickets. You know, to a certain extent, we already have a reservation. The reservation is you either have a pass or you have an advance purchase ticket. And so effectively, you already have a reservation under our existing system. So temporarily eliminating walk-up tickets. So if you don't have a ticket or a pass in hand or on your phone, don't come. That's step one. Wait until you can get one. The next thing we're doing is we are very tightly controlling the inventory of available day tickets for advance purchase. And so, you know, we have not made tickets available yet this season. Some resorts have, some haven't. We have not yet. Once we do start making them available, You're likely to see them available on days where we are fairly confident we're not going to have a visitation level issue. And so that's going to be primarily midweek, Monday through Friday, is where you'll see the first advance tickets become available. We think that through those two methods, we'll be able to materially control visitation, with the goal of having enough space in the base area and on the hill for people to be able to socially distance while they're here. That's our plan. That's how we're going forward. And we'll adjust our plan to reality once we see what happens. We think the reality is going to look a lot like what our plan says it's going to look like. If we get into a scenario where we decide that we need to take more aggressive steps to control visitation, one of those tools would be reservations for pass holders. We don't want to do that. It has impacts that, particularly to last minute decision making that a pass represents. That's part of the sort of cool part of being a pass holder that we'd like to keep in place, but we have the ability to change that.
And eliminating walk-up ticket purchases seems to be a great strategy to limit capacity. What are your mask requirements going to be for this season?
I really strongly encourage people listening to go to squawalpine.com and look at our Winter Experience 2021 page and the tabs that are on there that include our FAQs. And we go into detail about things like face coverings. And, you know, I think the general rule on face coverings at Squaw Alpine this season is you'll be required to wear a face covering when you're standing in a lift line, when you're indoors at a food service facility, when you're going indoors to use the bathroom, when you're in any area where physical distance can't be ensured. And so when you list all those things out, you get very quickly to sort of the punchline, which is, when you're here, once you get out of your car in the parking lot, you should pretty much be expecting to wear your face covering almost the entire time that you're here. And I think the sort of line that we've been kicking around is drop your mask and then drop into your line. And that's like that. Really what we'll expect people to do. Keep that face covering on when you're around other people, when you're on the lift. And even when you ski off the lift at the top and head down the ramp, and once you're off the ramp and you're skiing, in particular, you unload Saibo and come around to drop in, almost everybody takes a stop right there and makes sure their boots are in the right spot and they got their poles in the right place and their helmet goggle interface is right. That's the time to drop your mask. Then ski in. Yeah, when you get to the bottom and you come into an area with other people, it's time to pull the mask back up. So like I said, almost the entire time you're here, we'll be expecting you to have your face covering on.
We spoke with medical expert Dr. Fishman on a previous podcast, and he really pushed that two-layer face coverings are the best. So if you can get a two-layer face covering, that's great. And neck gaiters have often tested as a poor face covering, but even your neck gaiter, if you double that up, that's two layers. That's great. Are face coverings going to be available for purchase at Squaw Alpine?
Yeah, we'll have face coverings for purchase. I'm sure we'll have, just as we have all summer, some available as well for people who forgot to bring one, a typical surgical mask type thing, just like pretty much every store and restaurant in the United States has figured out how to have at the front, so that people who come in without them can quickly have one. It's really about the public health aspect of having it on. It's not about whether you left it in the car or not.
Will the gondola and tram be running this winter? And if so, how many people might be able to ride those?
Talk about challenges that large ski areas might have versus small ones. Funitel is a challenge for us.
For our listeners that don't know, sorry to interrupt, the Funitel is a larger than normal gondola that runs on two cables so it can run in higher wind. So it's a big, nice gondola we call the Funitel. Continue.
Yeah, that's right. And with an out-of-base operation like ours where you pull up into the parking lot and you really, we've got skiing on Snow King and skiing on KT, which are, of course, great. Few people would trade KT for anything. but it's out of the base. But so many people want to get up to the upper mountain. And Funitel was put in now 21 years ago to deal with that very issue of getting a significant number of people out of the base quickly and efficiently and getting them up to the upper mountain. And it does that job amazingly well. As you said, with two cables and larger cabins, because of that, we can stuff a Funitel to 28 people in a cabin, and we can get uphill capacity over 4,000 people per hour. That's obviously not an option in the age of coronavirus, and so we're kicking around still exactly how we're going to use the Funitel. It will be at a significantly reduced capacity from its rated limit. Whether that's 50% or less, still to be determined. The tram is also a great way to get people up, all the way up to high camp, where they can get out on the hill from there. We have not yet run the tram in summer. Snowbird ran its tram this summer, slightly smaller cabin than the Squaw Alpine Tram. They ran it at 25% capacity. And so for us, that's like 28 people or so. We'll open the tram when there's snow to high camp so that people who get there can get out of there and get out onto the hill. We won't be operating the tram until there's sufficient snow to get out of the high camp location. And we're likely to follow that 25%. We may, depending on our tier and how we're looking at things, we may be able to push that further to 50%. But I would expect us to be somewhere between 25 and 50% on the tram.
Sounds like a solid plan. And what's your plan for how many people can ride each chairlift?
So chairlifts, there's all kinds of discussion by public health experts about chairlifts. And there seems to be very little concern about coronavirus on chairlifts. You've got a fair amount of clothing on. You've got your mask on. You've got your gloves on. We will require face coverings while riding the chairlift, not just while in line. And so you've got all this protective health equipment on, and as you take off in the chair, you've got very, very strong directional airflow. That's any respiration that's getting through your mask is getting mixed out of there very quickly. It's not like being in an enclosed space. And so all of the public health discussion I've seen about chairlifts is that the risk on a chairlift is very low. The NSA, National Skiers Association, has an ride together approach. And so that's one approach, is ride with people in your household. I think that the things that we'll be pushing include that message. We've put a big effort, particularly last year, into filling our chairs. Something that our guests have rung us up on in the past is that our line management has something to be desired compared to other ski areas that they may have visited, and that we may not be stuffing our chairs full, resulting in longer lines. We put a big effort into that last year, and I think it was paying off. Now we're going to go the opposite way and not make any effort at all to put anybody into a chair with anybody else. We are not likely to have singles lines. People who are alone will just load into a maze line like anyone else, and we'll address that situation when they get to the front.
And I think the overall message is going to continue to be, when you're in the lift line, when you're riding chairs, be kind, be patient, because things might be a little different than what you're used to, might be a little slower than you used to, because certain people might have a reason they need to ride the chair by themselves. Let's all be understanding and empathetic about that. Will all lifts be running this season despite the changes going on with coronavirus?
Alpine tends to run almost all of its lifts every day. It doesn't have as big of a lift fleet as the Squaw Valley side. But even then, there are choices made on some days not to run certain lifts. You may not run ABC on a day where visitation is low and Summit's running. We'll still probably make those kinds of decisions based on terrain and on visitation. We can't commit to a, you know, to any kind of sort of blanket binary rule. It's on or it's off. There's always some adjustments on the Squaw Valley side. You know, terrain and lift decisions are really made by the mountain operations team, primarily based on whether that terrain is presenting good skiing or even navigable skiing at the time. We're a resort that has exposure on almost every aspect. We don't not run Broken Arrow, for example, out of laziness or a desire to not give Broken Arrow to our guests. What's going on behind the scenes when Broken Arrow isn't running is that Ski Patrol is periodically sending somebody down to see if they can even get an edge in, because it's got a southeast exposure on most of the terrain. And so the day before it warmed up and people were skiing it, and then it closed and then it went down to 10 degrees and it froze hard overnight. We're not going to put people into that terrain if they can't even get an edge in. And so Ski Patrol behind the scenes, what you don't see happening is them occasionally going in as the day progresses and making that determination. They want to give it to the guest as quickly as they can. Mountain Operations wants to give it to the guest as quickly as they can. But they've all been around long enough to know that if you give it at the wrong time, the guest is getting out of there on a toboggan more likely than on their edges. And so, you know, they're making those calls. We're going to continue to make those calls. We're going to push to open our lifts and our terrain as much as we can to give more space for people to spread out when we can. But we'll continue to make decisions based on, you know, all of the circumstances and try to run the place as best we can.
Will Squaw Alpine's restaurants be open? And if so, what are your plans for managing indoor spaces like restaurants and lodges?
Yeah, so you know, our plans will be scalable depending on what our tier is. In California, we're currently based on a 4-tier system. That could change again. It's already changed once, but right now we're in the 4-tier system. Placer County is currently in orange, although our numbers are trending towards red. Orange allows us 50% indoor capacity with a max of 200 in a space. Red would take us down to 25%, max 100. If we were able to make it into yellow, we'd be at 50%, no max. And so those tiers, depending on where the county sits in the tier system, will largely drive indoor food and beverage. So, you know, either way, no matter what tier we're in, we will have the ability of people to get hot food and hot beverages, cold beverages, all that kind of stuff. How much of a space is available indoor or outdoor will depend on conditions and depend on where our state and county regulations are at the moment.
What's the plan for the Squaw Valley Village?
Well, the village, you know, has a mix of indoor and outdoor spaces. We've been in operation in the village since June. And so we intend to stay in operation. It's a mix of businesses that we own and tenants in the village. There's some great restaurants that have been operating for months now successfully in the village. And so the villages plan to be open, and those restaurants plan to be open as well.
Great. And will bars be open?
I think the bar scene will be different this year. You know, we need to be responsible about how we operate. You know, when you go back to last spring and you think about everything that was going down, there was a lot of chat about Ischgl,
which is a ski resort in Austria that had a big outbreak that really spread to a lot of places and caused a lot of trouble. That's the background. Continue.
Yeah, I think public health officials in Norway, of all places, will tell you that Norwegian tourism at Ischgl at the peak of corona spread in late February or early March led to almost all of the initial cases of corona in Norway. And so as that got looked into and as it got explored and investigated more, it became very clear that the issue wasn't skiing. It was operate in tight spaces. It's people doing all those fun après things that we love to do.
And après is après ski, is basically getting a drink and hanging out with your friends after skiing.
And if you're at a place in Austria or somewhere in the Alps doing the chicken dance and you know, yelling and screaming and dancing on tables and doing all that kind of stuff, which we've learned subsequently is an increased risk of coronavirus transmission when you're in that tight space and you're having those loud conversations, one person right up in another person's face. You know, all the things that we used to really love about life that have been temporarily suspended. And so when we approach that the bar scene from our perspective, it'll be very different this year. We will have cocktail service and that sort of thing available, but you're unlikely to have a belly up service where you can hang out at the bar and have that great conversation about what you did or what the other person did that day. That kind of face-to-face contact obviously isn't really an option in a time of social distancing. And so the services are likely to be limited to when you're at your table with your group, with your household.
And let's all just be, again, try to be super cool about this après-ski scene, because in Ischgl, Austria, where they had this big outbreak that they think was due to après-ski partying, more or less, they have après-ski is banned for the upcoming season. And we don't want to end up there in California or anywhere in the US. Will cash be accepted this year?
So our current plan is to have contact-free, no cash transactions. And we ask that our guests do that. I think, you know, if we were 6 months ago, that might be a bigger ask than it is at this point. My personal perspective, you know, obviously I live in the world just like everybody else, and I've done a little bit to try to experience how, you know, how going somewhere else works. My wife and I took a trip ultimately all the way out to Colorado and back, went to a bunch of different tourist places, and I never needed cash. And so we're asking our guests to use their credit cards, and we'll have contact-free transactions so that nobody ever needs to touch their card besides them. And we'll try to keep it that way.
What precautions will be in place for Squaw Alpine employees to protect them from coronavirus this season?
You know, this is something we do every day. So we've been through hours and hours and hours of job hazard assessment analysis. We have documented procedures backwards and forwards. We have protective health equipment. We have personal protective equipment. We have different ways of approaching different tasks.
And how often do employees get tested for coronavirus?
Well, employees don't get tested any more than anybody else in society gets tested. The sort of survey test of whether, you know, just on any given day, I decide I'm going to go get a test to see if I got coronavirus. People don't really do that. And that's not what our government has asked us to do. Testing is focused on people who are symptomatic. And so we have decision trees based on when somebody needs to get a test, when they need to quarantine, how they need to quarantine. And we've been going through that process for months now. We've got an extensive set of guidelines that we've worked on as a company for how we approach employee issues. Going back all the way to the time of closure, we've had a slightly more than a dozen instances at our business where we've had what we would call a coronavirus report, that somebody for some reason has a concern about whether they might have coronavirus, an employee. And that can happen due to exposure to somebody who they subsequently learn tested positive. They may not think that they have anything that qualifies as that, but they are experiencing some known symptom of coronavirus. So we've had slightly more than a dozen of those instances across our staff of many hundred over the last 7 months. Those have tiered down to two positive tests. And in the rest of the scenarios, we've gone through the appropriate quarantine steps. And so we'll continue to work those rules.
Let me jump in right there. So what should a guest do if they test positive for coronavirus after visiting Squaw Alpine?
When you test positive, your county health department gets a report and they start the contact tracing process. And so, you know, you should be, if you do what's right here while you're here, you will not have need to answer yes to any question about whether you have an exposure, a capital E exposure to somebody else while you're here. You shouldn't be within 6 feet of somebody else who you don't know for more than 15 minutes while you're here. If you have symptoms and or you test positive, you need to work through that issue with your county health department. And if your county health department determines that that they need to follow up with us, they will, and we'll work through them with the to get them the answers to the questions as best we can.
Excellent. Well, let's get back into some fun stuff. Thank you for all those coronavirus answers. So I'm thinking about skiing the park a little bit. I didn't get to do it much last year because we closed early. Will Squaw Alpine Terrain Parks be affected by coronavirus restrictions this year?
We don't have a specific plan to have our terrain parks be impacted by coronavirus.
Good.
So, you know, we want to have terrain parks. They're an important part of the experience. Part of our plan for opening is to do what we did last year on the Squaw Valley side, which is to have season start features at the First Venture area so that people can get their legs back under them, even though the tricks and the features won't be very big. I know that most people who enjoy parks are come at it from the perspective of they could build a little hit in their backyard and be entertained all day. It's the fun of doing it. And so we'll have some small stuff to begin with. And when we get into the season proper and we've got enough snow to our intents to get right back into that.
Great. Where are we currently in the process of the base-to-base gondola, which is designed to connect the base area of Alpine Meadows Ski Resort to the base area of Squaw Valley Ski Resort?
Yeah, the interconnect gondola is an incredibly exciting project for us. It finished all of its planning and approval process about a year ago. And we had one environmental group who had concerns about particular aspects of the project who filed a lawsuit against the project. We were able to work with them, collaborate with them, and get to a settlement agreement that I think both of us were very happy with. And so we're clear from a regulatory and litigation perspective to construct. We are in very detailed planning on how to execute that. We're going to continue working on that project sort of diligently and deliberately. As soon as we have a commitment to build it, we'll share that with the public.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. And this question just kind of popped up in my mind. And if you could do it quick, we're running out of time here. What's it like financially for a ski resort? Can ski resorts make money this year with all these restrictions with coronavirus?
I think so. We'll find out. Our goal is to break even.
Great. Thank you for that answer. That's a great real talk answer. Let's talk about silver linings here, Ron. I think that I've found all these awesome silver linings with the pandemic, little things that you couldn't normally do. What do you think will be the silver lining for this very unique ski season that we're about to encounter?
I don't want to sound Pollyanna about it, but you know, if I had to focus on one thing, it would really be our ability to stay connected with the mountains and with our families and our tight friend groups. Skiing and riding this year, I think we'll really focus on those core pieces and maybe tie us back to, you know, maybe a little bit more tightly to the things that really drew us to this passion in the first place, and maybe remind us of some of those things that maybe we let something else maybe get in front of in normal times.
I think the positive health effects from getting out and skiing and riding and being out in the air and getting to do this exciting thing is going to be so beneficial for our culture. So I'm very excited as well. Ron, thank you so much for the real talk today. That was real talk. That's all I've got for you. Do you have anything other thoughts you'd like to add at the end of the show here?
If anyone has questions about how things might look here, take a look at our website at our winter experience tabs, and in particular our FAQs, and you'll see a lot of detail in there. And we look forward to seeing so many of you up here for skiing and riding the season.
I'm looking forward to it too. Thanks a ton, Ron. I greatly appreciate your time today. Thanks again, and let's make sure to talk soon. Thank you so much for listening to the Snow Brains podcast. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and please subscribe. To find out more about Snowbrains, please visit us at snowbrains.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Snowbrains. This episode of the Snowbrains podcast was brought to you by Alta Ski Area. The editing of this episode was done by Robert Wilkinson. The music was created by Chad Crouch. I'm your host, producer, and creator, Miles Clark. Thank you for listening.